be able to pull off this. If I was your preacher and this was the church, I mean, just take a look around right here. This is 50-50 diversity. This is no one people group equaling more than 50% diversity. This is the future of the church. To make this happen, I can't, there's no formula. You know, you can go to church planting boot camps, you can go to church planting conferences, and they actually have manuals developed. Maybe you've used one. And it'll say, follow these 60 steps. Here's your step one. Here's your step two, step three. And do you know, if you follow that, you actually have a more predictable chance of launching a successful church numerically. And if you follow it down the line, it actually works. Like, it really works. I can't give you that chart for this kind of church. It's a different animal altogether. This kind only comes out through prayer and fasting. This is a work of God and the Holy Spirit that cannot be humanly engineered or built through human means and effort. So to build a healthy multi-ethnic church, we have to first recognize that we can't do it. We have to embrace dependence, and that requires, of course, prayer, patience, and persistence. Prayer, patience, and persistence. Now, the second core commitment is, having said all that, we have to be intentional. We have to take intentional steps. Now, you might say, now, Mark, you just said this is all God. Like, we can't do anything, right? Well, I did. But I'm also saying, you got to pull it off. You got to do it. You got to be intentional about it. Now, if that sounds contradictory, let me ask you a question. How is it possible for a virgin to give birth to a child? Well, I don't know. How do people get saved? Does God do it? Who saves people? Does God save people? Or do we save people through sharing the gospel? What's the answer? Both. God didn't write John 3:16 on the Rocky Mountains. He said, you go and share. So it's all God and all us, all at the same time. See what I'm saying? Now, how does that work? I don't know. It's outside of my human thinking box, my categories. How is it possible there's one God, but there's three? I don't know. I can't figure it out, right? So we have these mysteries, and my point is, this is very similar to that. This is a work of God, completely His work, but you and I have to be intentional or it doesn't happen. And it's just like evangelism. And I don't know how that works. In the grand scheme of things, God will teach us why He did it that way, so we'll understand. But we have to be intentional. Now, speaking of intentionality, let me give you a couple things under this category that I want you to understand. First of all, intentionality, you have to be intentional to understand this one concept. There is a big difference between assimilation and accommodation in building healthy multi-ethnic churches. You know, I have no doubt that if I came to your church, and let's say most of your churches are segregated, I don't know that they are, but I go to an all-white church, all-black church, whatever, and I'm different. So if I go to an all-black church and I'm white, and the greeters greet me at the door, and they welcome me, and they're like, oh, we'd love to have you, and we're so glad you came, and they really mean that. Did you know that? They really do. They're glad for a white guy or a Chinese guy. They're thrilled for somebody to show up, or it could be blacks going to a white church. And I doubt that, I imagine that most of your greeters, most of the people in your church, hopefully all of them, would have no problem with someone who's different showing up, and they'd probably say, we would love to have more diversity here. We'd love for you black brothers to come into our church, and they really mean it. But you know what, those people, they really haven't thought deeply about what it is they really mean when they say that. Because even though people will say, we'd be glad to have you come and be a part of our church, what they really mean, as long as you like it the way we do things. That's really what they mean. They haven't thought about it. They don't mean it mean-spirited. But the second you bring your culture, the second you bring some different form into the church, there's going to be problems. So what happens if you're an all-white pastor and an African-American shows up and says, hey, pastor, man, I think we could attract more African-Americans here if we had a gospel choir every now and then. What are you going to say? Well, I know a lot of white pastors, they go, oh, man, that'd be awesome if we had a gospel choir. I think it'd be so great, you know, but I mean, gosh, look at our musicians. I mean, we don't have the talent, but you know what? There's a great missionary Baptist church right up the street called Second Baptist. They got a great gospel choir, and I bet you'd probably love it there. Well-meaning pastor, but what did you just do? What did you just say? You just said, you're really not welcome here, you won't like it, we're not changing things. You didn't mean to do that, but that's what you said. Right? Now let me ask you a question. Has anybody in this room ever felt that going to church? Raise your hand if you've ever felt or heard that statement directly to you. A lot of you. So having said that, What people want is assimilation. They don't want accommodation. So assimilation is, I'm a white pastor, all white church, and a black guy shows up, and I'm going to help the black guy get comfortable with the way we do things. Here's how we do our small groups. Here's how we do our children. Here's what the music's like. Here's the preaching style. And as long as the black guy likes it, everybody's happy. But if the black guy suggests the gospel choir and starts to push it a little bit, we're going to have some problems. Now, I use that as an example because it actually happened to me in the early days of Mosaic. An African-American woman came up. She said the very same thing. But I said, because I understood this in those days and we talked about it, I said, well, how do you do that? I don't know how to do it, but would you be willing to start it? Well, I'm not a musician, but I'll figure it out, she said. And 6 months later, our little 11-member gospel choir was in the middle of Christianity Today. You think of all the gospel choirs all over this country, and they're talking about a multi-ethnic church with our 11 people sitting in the middle of that magazine. And it did lead to more African-Americans coming to our church. Now, let me just say this. African-Americans, just like all of us, we're not so condescending to think that we can use gimmicks to get people in the door. But what it's showing is some cross-cultural competence that we'll talk about later. Then all I'm trying to make the point is, part of the intentionality, understand this. Assimilation is when you ask the minority to change for the majority. Accommodation is when the majority culture changes to welcome the minority. And that's a very important point to understand in terms of building healthy multi-ethnic church. You have to reverse your thinking. So in our case, we added gospel music to our repertoire. We bring your culture on in. There's nothing in here that says you can't do gospel music, right? So why should I say, as the pastor, we're not going to have gospel music? And so that's called accommodation. Now, just to be clear, we're not talking about accommodating theology, right? So the Hindus are coming in, oh, sure, bring on your Hindu theology or whatever, right? So I'm not talking about theology. I'm talking about forms and practices that are we're not restricted or we're not governed by this book on. We have freedom. So we learn to accommodate for culture. Another intentional thing that we have to do is we cannot allow any longer the homogeneous unit principle to inform our understanding of success in church planning, growth, and development. I'm not quite there yet, Pastor. Let me just repeat that. You have to be intentional to reject the homogeneous unit principle that we've all been taught for 70 years. It can no longer measure or inform us in terms of our success in terms of church planning, growth, and development in this country. And I'm going to talk about why that is true in a little bit later. But I'll just say this now. The homogeneous unit principle has been used around the world for 70 years to inform church planning, growth, and development. Essentially, it asks you, the church planner, to target a people group, and it only funds you when you have a specific people group in mind. And when you figure out your target group, we'll fund you, and you plant a church, because churches grow fastest when they're homogeneous, and guess what? It's really true. It works. So target some white people, black people, give them the music they want, Hispanics, give them the preaching style they want, the children's style, the color carpet they want, the environment. You market to a segment of the population, and your church will grow fast. And guess what? It really works. It really does. The problem is we got to ask, does it grow biblically? So I didn't see Jesus talking about growing churches fastest. I just see the whole thing talking about being biblical. And the homogeneous unit principle is an evangelistic principle that is biblical, but it's been misapplied to church growth and development. In other words, if you're going to evangelize the Koreans, absolutely get them the Bible in their language. Bring the gospel through the culture, not to the culture, on and on, all those things. That's called evangelism and discipleship. Jesus practiced that. But see, when you cross the line to plant or develop or grow a church, you have no biblical freedom or license or mandate to plant a church for a specific people group. It's a confused principle. And it's been used to build big numbers in the name of evangelism and men's kingdoms, not the kingdom of God. So if you're using the HUP for evangelism and discipleship, awesome, great. But you can't apply that to the church, and yet that's the way we've all been taught for 70 years. So in these days, the pioneers are challenging the biblical nature of the homogeneous unit principle as applied to church planning, growth, and development. And to build a healthy multi-ethnic church, we have to intentionally tear down that wrong principle and apply it only in evangelism and discipleship. Thirdly, is empower diverse leadership. We saw this in Acts 13:1, the very first and most significant church. By the way, Antioch was mega missional and multi-ethnic. You ever think about that? A mega missional multi-ethnic church at Antioch led by five diverse people, as Acts 13:1 tells us. Credibility and modeling, of course, begins at the top with leadership. And to build a healthy multi-ethnic church, we have to empower diverse leadership, not just in terms of the paid staff, but volunteers from the nursery to the deacon room, whatever, and at every stage in between, we have to empower diverse leadership. Now, speaking towards that, have you ever asked yourself the question why the best man or the woman, best man for the job always looks like you in a church? I was in a church of 5,000 white people for 8 years. When I started there, it was 2,000. I was the youth pastor. We grew to 5. And we hired well over 100 people in the 8 years that I was there in this church. And in every case of a high pastoral level leadership, the leadership of our church would get in the pulpit and say, we looked all over the country and we found the best man for the job and here he is. He's going to do singles ministry or he's going to do this. And you know, after a while I started thinking, how come the best man for the job always is white? And I started thinking about that. And this is why. You tell me if I'm wrong. You're in a church, you're pastor in a church, or you're a deacon board or search committee, and you go, man, we need a youth pastor. And the first thing you say, you think about who you know, right? And you ask the people around you who they know. Well, everybody around you is just like you. And who you know and who they know are all people just like you. You went to school together, you grew up together. So they start, everybody's contacts start going out and you get some candidates and eventually they get in and they look just like you because you don't know anybody who's different than you. You didn't go outside your slice of the pie to ask. And that's how it happens. So again, no one means this. We're not intentional about this. I'm saying you have to be intentional about it. We have to think about it because if I truly want the best man or woman for you, I got to ask a bunch of different people, you know? From maybe parts of the country different, maybe ethnic, culture different, but I want a wide diversity to choose from for a particular position. So this is why we fall into these ruts of self-perpetuating segregation because we don't think outside our culture when it comes to hiring or empowering leadership. And along this line too, I want to say this, that empowering diverse leadership in terms of intentionality is like a continuum. I'm not promoting at all quotas, at all. So you shouldn't sit in a room, in my opinion, and say, okay, let's get 2 blacks, 2 whites, 2 Asians, 2 Hispanics on the deacon board, and then we'll have a healthy church, right? That's kind of, doesn't that feel forced, kind of man's way? On the other hand, you can't sit around and pray all day, oh God, please bring a black man to my white church, right? You can't just sit around and hope this happens. Lord, bring us some Chinese guy that really believes like I do theologically and can preach and play guitar or whatever, you know? You can't sit in your room and pray. So on one end, you've got this forced deal called quotas. On the other hand, you have wishful thinking. Wishful thinking will not create a healthy multi-ethnic church. Intentionality is the middle ground between quota and wishful thinking. So I'll give you a real-time example. We had a guy, he's just leaving our staff, and one of his roles has been running the children's ministry, but he's not really a passionate children's leader. He'd tell you that. He's a great guy. But that wasn't his passion. So we said, man, this is a great opportunity to hire someone who is passionate about children. And to make a long story short, we're going to be able to empower 3 people to do that through some part-time funding and really the head guy doing it for free. And so anyway, it just so happens instantly he leaves and we know who we're going to, but it's 2 white people, okay? Because they're in the church, passionate about children. It's an older man and a younger guy like 25. Okay, but we have 3 positions. And these guys are the perfect fit for us. They're in our church. It's everything right. But our elders sat around even Wednesday night and said, okay, well, guess what? Our preschool director, which is the 3rd part of that team, has to be a minority. Now, is that quota? Is that wishful thinking? No, that's intentionality. Because we're about to hire a youth pastor too. It might be, we sent out all over, we got one guy from Africa, 1 black. We had 60 resumes and like 55 were white. We could end up with a white youth pastor. We could. So we're thinking like that. And if you don't catch yourself and kind of be intentional about that, pretty soon it's going to look like, you see what I'm saying? So the very fact that we're empowering 2 whites, just it says no to the next white person on that because we have that for a minority. It's the other way around. So we're navigating not quotas but not wishful thinking, just trying to be intentional to put our money where our mouth is and build a healthy multi-ethnic staff. 4th one is develop cross-cultural relationships. Of course, relationships are important in any church setting, but particularly in a multi-ethnic church, they are invaluable to the foundation. Why? Because they form the fabric of it. Trust is not a commodity so easily assumed when you are walking, working, worshiping God together with others who are different than you. In other words, in that church of 5,000 that I came from, mostly white, mostly economically privileged, mostly educated, when I walk into that room, there's a lot of trust already because I have the same economic background. I have the same education. I went to the same seminaries that they value. And so right away, there's a ton of trust that's already there. And then I can build on that. When I'm sitting next to, you know, a guy that's here from Honduras that we brought from Honduras and doesn't speak English, but to join our staff, when I'm sitting next to my colleague of now 8.5 years who's a second generation, 100% Chinese American, you know, when I bring in the African American to share the pulpit with me and on, these are diverse guys from diverse backgrounds, and we have to start at the basics. When we started our church, we had a 65-year-old white man in a room full of about 3 or 4 African Americans, a couple other white guys, and the white guy who grew up in Arkansas says to the blacks, "Now, what do we call you people?" Now, you know, in most places, that would almost come off as offensive, right? But not in our church. Why? Because we understand that's where it all starts. The reason the white guy's asking it, because he said, "I grew up in a racist home. My parents were so against blacks, and I grew up with this, that, and this. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to offend. I want to respect. What do we call you? How can I address you, you know, without offending you?" You can't assume this. I don't have to walk into a white church and wonder, "Hey, what do we call each other?" So it starts at square one, and because trust is already there when you're in a place of people just like you. But when you're in a place of different people, it starts at square one. So we have to really work hard to develop cross-cultural relationships. And like the brothers were saying yesterday when we were out to dinner, it's great. If we can get a church in the pews to look like this, man, this is awesome. So if this is Sunday morning and I'm here preaching and you're our church, I'd be going, "Man, this is awesome." Wouldn't you be saying it's awesome? Now listen, that's one step forward in this whole thing, but let me ask you a question. Would you invite each other out to dinner across race lines? Would you go to the lake with each other? Would you have dinner? Would you allow your children to date? See what I'm saying? So this is a great step. If this was the church, this would be a great step, and we'd give ourselves a lot of praise, but we got to keep going. And where we keep going is relationships, because if all we got is this and we don't have relationships, you will not have a healthy multi-ethnic church, and you'll be ineffective at advancing the gospel in the way that we've been talking about. Now, I'm sure I'm the only person in the room that's ever gotten an argument with your spouse. Is that true? Huh? Yeah? Anybody ever get in an argument with your spouse? Raise your hand. Okay, let me ask you even more a personal question. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to ask you honestly here. Don't put this on YouTube. Don't show the camera, okay? How many of you, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to raise my hand first, have ever had thoughts of walking out on your marriage? Come on, be honest. I know my wife, if she's standing here, she'd be the same way. I'm done with that guy. And I'm serious. Raise your hands. Come on. We need to be honest. Look how many. And the rest of you are all lying. Now listen. That divorce, of course, is nothing to joke about. But here's my point. There are some days I don't want to be married to my wife anymore. There are some days she doesn't want to be married. We got so sideways. Something happens. We offend each other, tick each other off. There are some days that this is the only thing that keeps me there. And she would say the same thing. And so in our church, we call it keep the ring on. Because in a multi-ethnic church, there is 100% chance you're going to offend somebody or they're going to offend you. 100% chance. 100% chance you're going to be misunderstood, misaligned, misjudged, all the misses, right? It's 100% going to happen. So when it happens, how do you respond? Do you walk out the door or do you keep the ring on and communicate and work through it? That's part of building a healthy multi-ethnic church. You got to be committed to this thing, called and committed. Otherwise, it can't happen. The fifth one is pursue cross-cultural competence. Of course, building relationships will take us to this point where we have to pursue cross-cultural competence. And I'm speaking in the context of proficiency in addressing another's culture or customs, their needs and expectations that are different than our own. We have to learn to interact in appropriate ways and develop cross-cultural competence. So if the white guy who asked the African Americans, "Now what do we call you people?" If he's still asking that 5 or 8 years from now, he's not advancing on cross-cultural competence. So we have to learn the lessons. and pick these things up. And then it gives us more proficiency then of interacting with different people. Obviously, it's simple. If I learned to speak Spanish and I lived in Mexico City, let's say, 5 years, and I became culturally competent, you see, that I want to pursue that. Now, just to give you hope, if you're a pastor or ministry leader, you don't have to speak all these different languages. You don't have to do any of that. But you have to be learning and encouraging others to learn. And I'll never probably learn any other language than English proficiently. But that doesn't stop me in other ways from pursuing cross-cultural competence. It doesn't keep me from learning a simple word like bienvenidos. And every time the Hispanics come into our church, the first thing I say, bienvenidos, you know? And just simple things can do that. Let me give you a couple examples. Like with a deaf culture, by the way, when I'm talking ethnicity, I mean everything, economic diversity and handicap, whatever. But, you know, in terms of pursuing cross-cultural competence, my colleague Harry sat down with our deaf ministry that we had several years ago, the deaf leadership, and said, how are we doing? And they said, well, I know your heart's in the right place, but you're not doing a very good job. And we said, okay, what are we doing? So, well, let me give you one example, they said. They said, and this is a good church to show it. Here's your preacher in the middle of the room. So let's say we have the deaf people right here to the side. You guys, how many have churches with deaf people in it? Do you have them on the side typically? Okay, it's kind of a typical setup. So you got your deaf off to the side, you got your interpreter here. They said, I want you to think about this. That you're in the pulpit here preaching, the deaf community's here, and so right over here, let's say by this stand or so, is your interpreter, okay? But then we have two screens on the side and we play a video. Or we're showing PowerPoint slides or whatever. Deaf people, of course, hear with their eyes. So what are you asking the deaf person sitting over here to do? Look in three different directions if they want to get the total message. I bet none of you ever thought, I never thought of that, right? We thought we were doing good to have a deaf interpreter. But see, this is pursuit of cross-cultural competence. So what did we do? Well, we kept our deaf people there. We put the interpreter straight in a line like this. We bought them a TV, a big screen TV, and put the TV behind the interpreter all the way onto the pulpit. So everything was in the line of sight. Pursuit of cross-cultural competence. Another thing Harry learned is that they were being distracted because children would be walked from one classroom to another during that service. And deaf people hear with their eyes. So when they saw movement, it's like us being interrupted with noise. And so they were losing track. So we bought a big curtain and we hung it on in an area of the sanctuary. We have an open kind of a thing. We're in an old Walmart, by the way. So we hung a curtain so the deaf people couldn't see the kids when they moved. Pursuit of cross-cultural competence. Now, a lot of that can be serious, and it is at times. And by the way, when you're encouraging cross-cultural competence, you can just tell everybody this. You know, most churches are all about trying to get everybody to feel comfortable, right? In a multi-ethnic church, how is everyone comfortable? Because everyone's uncomfortable. And that's why we're all comfortable. So you teach everybody, look, you're uncomfortable, we're all uncomfortable, so everybody can be comfortable, because we're all uncomfortable. It's upside down. But all that's to say is that the pursuit of cross-cultural competence and the things we learn, it's not always serious, and there's some fun moments as well. And I don't know, we don't have a chair up here on the podium, but we meet in an old Walmart, like I said, and in about 5-6 years ago when we first went in there, people would bring their chairs, like those soccer mom chairs you get at Walmart, you know, and they'd be over your shoulder. And I'll never forget the lady who was pregnant, and she had a big double wide one day. She was right down the front with two big drink cups and her feet propped up on a deal like this, you know. So it was like, bring your own chair. So we finally got to a point where we were going to buy chairs, and I bought a chair, and I'll just use this podium here for an example. But I bought this chair, and it in a nice color and all that, and it was comfortable. And I put it up in front of the church, and I said, hey, we found this chair, and they're $25, and if everybody give $25 for you and your family, we could buy, you know, 300-400 chairs, and we could finally have chairs here. And so everybody goes, oh, that's a good idea. I said, yeah, it looks good, right? And it's cushiony. In fact, I sat down on the chair earlier this week, and I put my buns in the chair, and it felt pretty good to my buns. So when I said the word buns, you know, just like few people chuckled a little bit, laughed, and I saw that. So I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, some of our staff came and they put their buns in the chair earlier this week, and it felt good to their buns. So more people laughed, thinking about the staff. I said, now, you know, some of the people on our staff, they have bigger buns than others, right? But no matter how big or small your buns are, why don't you come after the service, put your buns in the chair, and if you like how it feels, then everybody pitch in $25, we'll buy some chairs. So by the time I got done, everybody's laughing in there, right? Like all the people, black people, white people, everybody's laughing. Guatemalans, Hondurans. There's only one group of people not laughing. It's about eight Mexicans on the back row with headsets on. And they're not laughing. And at the end of the service, one of the ladies goes up to our translator, and we had an awesome translator in the day, really UN quality. And she says, "I can't believe you said that. Don't ever say that in church. I can't believe you said that word." And the translator's like, "What word? I don't know what you're saying." She said, "You use that word, and you shouldn't have said it." She said, you said nalgus. And the girl said, yeah, so what's wrong? Well, see, the girl that was translating is from Nicaragua. And as it turns out, in every country in Central and South America, the word nalgus is a very excellent, equal translation to the word buns, non-offensive, no big deal. But we found out that day in one country, the country of Mexico, the word nalgas means ass. Now, I want you to picture your pastor on a Sunday morning. And he says, "Hey, we're going to get some new chairs," and I put my ass in the chair. It felt pretty good to my ass. You know, some our staff came and put their asses in the chair. Felt pretty good to their asses, too. Now, you know, some people on our staff have bigger asses than others, but no matter how big or small your ass is, come put it in the chair at the end of the service. And do you know that is exactly how all the Mexicans heard me say that day? So we never use the word nalgas ever again in translation. But all of that, it can be fun and serious, but the point is we're pursuing and learning from one another across cultural competence as we go to build a healthy multi-ethnic church. Six, promote a spirit of inclusion. Promote a spirit of inclusion. You know, we have to recognize in a multi-ethnic church that it's not about us. It's about all people. In fact, you know, where in this book does it say it's about what you like in church? You ever think about that? Where is it in here? It says it's about what kind of music you like. What kind of whatever you like. Nothing in here is about you, is it? Nothing in here is about me. I thought we were supposed to align the church with God's will for the church, not get the church to fit my will as the pastor. Right? So to build a healthy multi-ethnic church, we have to pursue, promote a spirit of inclusion. And having said that, one of the best ways to give you an example of that is like in our church, for instance, promoting a spirit of inclusion. We're bilingual with Hispanic people, about 16-18%. And so when we first printed bulletins about 4 years ago, we had, you know, Spanish bulletins, English bulletins, right? And so when the person laid them out the very first Sunday, there was a table in the back of the room, and they put the Spanish bulletins on one table and the English bulletins on another. Now, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? We're going to avoid a lot of confusion. Oh, you're Hispanic? Go over there. Your bulletins, oh, you're an English speaker? Go over here, right? And it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? It avoids confusion. But obviously, you can see there's another problem it creates. What's that? Separation, segregation, you, us, right? Differences. So if you come to Mosaic today, all the bulletins are one table, and it's a good chance you might end up with a Hispanic bulletin sitting in your English seat. But you see, we would rather live with that confusion, right? We'd rather live with that problem than this problem. And it's one way we promote a spirit of inclusion. In our church, we hang flags. Maybe your churches have flags. In our church, the flags that we hang, we have about 30 or 32, or I don't know what's up there right now, but the flags represent the diversity of people who come to Christ in our body or who join our church. So if you join our church from Haiti, we just had two little babies from Haiti join. We give them the Haiti flag to the family, hang it in all our flags. I can't tell you how many people walk in there from different nations and see their flag and it says something right away. I can't tell you the times people have told me what a big deal that is. Even most recently, 3 months ago, when 11 Jewish students in town for a Habitat for Humanity project, a Methodist pastor knew about our church. He said, "I got a church." They wanted to visit a church. They sent them to our church. And we have Messianic Jews. And they have a Jewish flag. And they walked in and blew them away. Simple little things you can do to promote a spirit of inclusion. But then there's bigger issues of inclusion. And let me just give you this real quick. Let's say you lived in a multi-generational house. And you had grandma and parents and kids there. And in this house, it's dinner, Monday night, dinner, 6 o'clock, everyone's supposed to be there, right? So you show up for dinner, grandma's there helping out, the parents are there, all the kids are there, but there's one kid, your 16-year-old son, he's not there yet. And you're waiting to start dinner, and you're like, hey, where's Johnny? And they say, oh, he's up in his room, I think. Maybe he doesn't know it's time for dinner. So you go up to there, sure enough, he's up in his room, and he's playing Xbox, you know, he's playing video games. He's got his headphones on, you pull him off, and you say, hey, maybe he didn't hear it's time for dinner. He goes, oh, no, Dad, I knew it's time for dinner. I'm just not coming to dinner tonight. And you say, what do you mean you're not coming to dinner tonight? He says, well, Mom's serving meatloaf. I hate meatloaf. So I know we're doing pizza tomorrow night, so I'll be there for tomorrow night. So I'm skipping tonight. Let me ask you a question. If that was your son, what would you say to him in that moment? I know what you're thinking. Get your nalgas to the table, right? Now, I bet not one of you would allow your kid to stay in that room and skip the family meal, would you? Why? You'd say, get to the meal, and you'd teach him, and you'd say, you know what, here's the deal. If that seat is empty, you're missing from all the transference that comes from the family to you. And we're missing from all that you bring to the family. And it would be unacceptable. And in that moment, you would teach your son, it's not about the food, it's about the family. And you would insist on him understanding that. That's the absolute best illustration I know to help you with things like music in your church to promote a spirit of inclusion. See, in our church, we rotate music. So one week it might be gospel, one week it might be some Hispanic music. And you know what? Not every Sunday you get what you like. Lots of people, you don't like it. Like, that's not my style. I don't listen to that in the car. That's not what I'm about. Well, great. You know what? It's not about you. So what we teach people is on the days that we're serving meatloaf and you like pizza. See, grandma's going to be there Tuesday night for the pizza. She won't eat it, right? She'll just pick out, but she's just glad to have a seat at the table. She's just glad to still be alive and be there and enjoy it, and she sees the kids. Here's the deal. On the days we're not serving your favorite food, we ask you to claim Philippians 2. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of, and you look around the room and see all the people getting off on the gospel music that day, and you say, thank God I even got a seat at this table. Because next week, they're going to have to claim Philippians 2 when they're listening to rock and roll or choir music or whatever it is. You see what I'm saying? But we have to promote this spirit of inclusion. Otherwise, we can't build a healthy multi-ethnic church. And finally, and I'll quit with this, the last one is mobilize for impact. Look, it's not, as I mentioned earlier, about getting a bunch of diverse people into a room and singing kumbaya. There's a mission to this multi-ethnic deal, and that is we believe it is the way, the most effective means to reach a diverse world for the sake of the gospel, as Christ said it would be. So we want to mobilize ourselves, not just enjoy the diversity of our family, but mobilize it to reach a diverse world outside. And so having said all that, the intended outcome of a multi-ethnic church is not unity for unity's sake. What we want to do is turn the power and the pleasure of God outward in order to bless the city, lead people to Christ, encourage the greater body, and fulfill the Great Commission. So in order to mobilize for impact, we then take our collective force and turn it outward so that others can in fact see it and see that love in action and come to know Jesus as we do. Well, again, we're out of time for this segment. 7 core commitments. Next slide, I think there's a couple in there. Keep going, and we'll come back to that. I mentioned the resources there. All of the first 2 talks are a quick way, but all mined in this book back there at the table, as I mentioned. You get the ethnic blends. And the next slide, see if there's something. By the way, if you're looking for more information or to connect with me, my blog, markdemaz.com, and my Twitter, if you follow Twitter, if you're on Twitter, it's @markdemaz. Just a couple more resources for you. So, again, 5, 6, 7 minute break, is that right? Do you have any announcements, Ken, or anything?